Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
It's a Tuesday morning. It's July 9th, 2019. I hope you're having a great day and a great summer. Keep it right here at EWTN for great interviews, great information, and really great news sources, including EWTNnews.com, EWTN News Nightly, The World Over, Church Pop, National Catholic Register, and so much more. And, of course, our program as well, Catholic Connection, Crest in the Afternoon, all the other great shows here that air every day on EWTN Radio. We've got a really great interview coming up, and thank you to my amazing producer, Andrew, for grabbing Father Tapa Holchek because he's so busy. And he is with the National Catholic Bioethics Center, and he's brilliant, okay? That's an understatement. He's got, I don't know how many degrees. I remember introducing him serving as an MC for an event that was held here in the Archdiocese of Detroit. And they handed me his bio, and I said, I can't read this entire bio. It'll cut into his speaking time. It's so long and so amazing and detailed. Suffice it to say, he is an expert on the church teachings on life and science and bioethics, and he's going to join us this morning to talk about why the church teaches what she teaches, in particular regarding in vitro fertilization, given that there have been some stories, including one that just broke in the last few days, a heartbreaking story, yet another one, about a couple that spent over $100,000 and went through Lord knows what. And the story of what happened, I'm sure you've heard about it. We'll get into it, into the interview with Father. But you have to pray for them. Only God knows what was going on in their lives and why they chose this. We don't even know if they're Catholic or not. If they were Catholic, did they know? We don't know. This is not to pass judgment on those people. But this is just to say that we need to, when we see stories like this, we need to take a look at things and say, okay, what does the church say? Why does a church teach this or that about abortion or contraception or IVF? When you break away, and this is what it says in the catechism, I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the quotes pulled up in front of me, but I will when we have the interview with Father Tad. When you break away from the natural law and you try to take these things into your own hands, they implode. And we see examples of that in society over and over again. Last year, there were two stories at the same time, one in San Francisco, one in Cleveland, where thousands of embryos were lost because of problems at the facilities. Some say it was human error. Others say it was equipment malfunction. And what the catechism talks about is once you decide to, quote unquote, conceive a baby outside of the natural process, in terms of removing it from the act between the husband and a wife, then you're turning control over to somebody else other than God. And that's where the trouble begins, brothers and sisters. And I talked about this in the first hour of my program, the regional hour of Catholic Connection, in light of our reading today, the first reading with Jacob and the wrestling match with God along the Jordan River. We actually just went to that spot with Steve Wright earlier this year. It was fascinating. But how many of us wrestle with God? And say, I don't understand this, Lord. This is not what I want, and this doesn't sound fair to me. Why do you tell us we can or can't do this, that, or the other thing? Now, this wrestling, this questioning, this struggle shows a desire to understand. It shows a desire that you want to see why the church teaches what she teaches. And this is what Father Tad's going to share with us this morning. And God knows your struggles. He knows what's on your heart. But many times, and I'm sure you've had these discussions, maybe you had them with your spouse or a family member yourself, sometimes we get our backs up and we say, the church is oppressive. The church is backward. How could they possibly teach this or that? Without even bothering to talk to someone like a Father Tad or your local priest or someone who is an expert in the life teachings or consulting someone in the Catholic faith online. And there are all kinds of resources available, especially at the National Catholic Bioethics Center. Not to mention all the pro-life experts we have here at EWTN. But to always, always, always say, okay, Lord, I may not understand it, so show me. I believe, help me in my unbelief. God doesn't mind the questions. He wants you to use your God-given brain. But we need to see the wisdom of the church at the end of the day. even if we don't understand it all at once. So we'll talk about that in light of these stories and what they reveal about the beauty and the truth of church teaching and the dignity of each human person from conception until natural death. And then there's a troubling story, a lot of questions about why the Holy Father gave relics of the first Pope, St. Peter, to the Orthodox Church. And Joan Lewis has written a very good blog, her second on this, and she's going to be joining us. We're doing Joan's Rome today, and she's going to be joining us live at about 39 minutes past the hour. So I do hope you can stay for the entire hour, a lot to discuss, and we'll give you the phone number before we take a break if you have a question for Father Tad Poholcek, Director of Education at the National Catholic Bioethics Center. Right now, on this Tuesday morning, July 9th, let's see what's happening in and around the world. Well, a new report prepared for the British government says Christians are by far the most widely persecuted religious group. The report also recommending the government become the world leader in promoting religious liberty. The nearly 180-page report was commissioned by British Secretary of State for Foreign and Commonwealth Affairs, Jeremy Hunt. The report released a few days ago estimating one-third of the world's population suffers from religious persecution, with Christians being the most persecuted. It says in some regions, a level of persecution Christians face actually approaches meeting the definition of genocide adopted by the UN. A California measure that would have required priests to break the sacramental seal of confession shelved by its sponsor amidst a campaign mounted by the state's Catholics, members of other faith groups, and religious liberty advocates from across the country. Los Angeles Archbishop Jose Gomez leading the California bishops in opposing the bill, saying the measure was a dangerous piece of legislation. The vice president says he's outraged at comparisons of ICE detention facilities along the southern border to Nazi concentration camps. While speaking at the Christians United for Israel convention in Washington, D.C. yesterday, Mike Pence saying the suffering of Holocaust victims must never be cheapened.
We must never allow the memory of those lost in the Holocaust to be cheapened as a cliche to advance some left-wing political narrative.
Pence calling defense by the left and media of Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's comments about the detention facilities shameful and an outrage. He added Nazis took millions of lives while U.S. law enforcement saves lives every day. The congresswoman compared the border detention facilities to Nazi concentration camps. Pope Francis yesterday appointing 23 new members of the Congregation for Institutes of Consecrated Life and Societies of Apostolic Life, among them six women religious superior generals and one head of a woman's secular institute. Nominations including cardinals, bishops, and the superior generals of several male religious communities, breaking with past practice in including women. Billionaire Jeffrey Epstein, as reporter Phil Hewlett tells us, maintaining his innocence amid sex trafficking charges.
He pleaded not guilty to the sex trafficking of underage girls as well as a conspiracy charge. New York U.S. Attorney Jeffrey Berman handed down the charges, accusing Epstein of creating a network allowing him to sexually exploit and abuse dozens of underage girls, some as young as 14. Epstein faces up to 45 years in prison.
As Southern California remains on edge after two powerful quakes last week, experts predicting another one could be on the way this week. Aftershocks have been taking place regularly since Friday's magnitude 7.1 Ridgecrest quake. Miguel Amaguar says all the shaking has definitely, he explains, left some people pretty on edge.
The fault lines and fractures, especially here in the desert, are growing. Geologists say they may be up to 30 miles long. In the coming months and even years, we may still be feeling earthquakes here.
In the longer term, the U.S. Geological Survey is saying there's a 70% chance a magnitude 6.7 or higher will hit the San Francisco Bay Area along the San Andreas Fault before 2030. And it looks like a tropical depression is forming off the Gulf Coast. Mark Mayfield says forecasters are claiming it could turn into a hurricane.
According to the National Hurricane Center, there's an 80% chance that a tropical depression will form by the end of this week. That means people from eastern Louisiana to western Florida should be on the alert for heavy downpours and a high risk of flooding later this week and into the weekend. Cities that could be at risk include New Orleans, Mobile, and Pensacola.
Eric Swalwell is dropping out of the Democratic presidential race.
Today ends our presidential campaign.
The California congressman announcing his White House bid about 3 months ago, but his campaign failed to gain traction in the crowded Democratic field. He called it a talented group and made no endorsement. He said he ran to elevate the issues of violence and climate change. He noted that he has no regrets and will seek re-election as a congressman next year. The Small Business Optimism Index running close to historic highs. The overall index picking up 1.5 points in May, while elements hit some of the highest levels ever. Planned capital outlays were near historic highs across a range of industries, including transportation, manufacturing, professional services, and construction as well. And 30% of business owners say now is a good time for them to expand. Finally, in our news segment, on a Tuesday, July 9, 2019, Elise Aziz says hospitals are often charging up to 5 times their costs for medicines.
A new analysis from the Moran Company shows that this is driving up cost sharing and premiums for patients across the country. Most of the hospitals studied purchased their meds through a discount program that was designed to make sure vulnerable or uninsured patients have access to less expensive medications. According to this analysis, though, many hospitals are providing less care to needy patients and instead are making excessive profits as a result of the program.
And it's a Tuesday. Hope it's going well for you. Up next, wrestling with God on some big issues. We've all been there, done that. Father Tad Pohlcheck comes along to really dive into the teaching on why the church says no to in vitro fertilization. Taking a look at some of the stories that have made headlines recently, reflecting, really, if you think about it, and if you open your mind and heart, the beauty of God's plan for us and why, when we go against the natural law, it does not go well. 877-573-7825 is the phone number. Father Tad Pohlcheck is director, again, of education at the National Catholic Bioethics Center. A great website, tons of info. So here it is. I will repeat it again, but jot it down. ncbcenter.org for National Catholic Bioethics Center, ncbcenter.org. Father Tad joins us up next, plus your phone calls, and then checking in with Joan Lewis live from the Eternal City. All of that, plus you, on a Tuesday morning. You're listening to EWTN, and we will be right back.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
Part of the success we've had on the world over, I attribute to certainly my relationship with Mother Angelica and her teaching me early on that when you sit with someone, you talk to them, you share with them, and you create an environment where they will tell you things they wouldn't tell anyone else.
The World Over with Raven DeRoyo, Thursday night, 8 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling. 35 years of experience, pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plans, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right. Well, my wife used Seton, some of our children. And I will tell you this, two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT, 27% higher on English and reading. It is a rigorous program. At least now, 1.3 million students are homeschooled. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to SetonHome.org. SetonHome.org.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
To vent or not? If I get it off my chest, then I feel better. I've got to vent. Is this so? It's old theory. Somewhat like a catharsis. You've got to purge yourself of these emotions, and Lord help anyone who's standing in the way. It's old theory. It's inaccurate. Venting is generally not good for the hearers, and it's not good for the venter. Venting may be good for dryers. It's not good for people. When we vent, we become more likely to vent. And when we are more likely to vent, we are more likely to hurt and say things we shouldn't say. Careful on the venting. Better to think about what you have to say before you vent.
It's a Tuesday morning. Hope your summer is going well. 877-573-7825. We should never be afraid to ask the questions because the church has the answers, and especially the church gives us such great teachers, including our guest this morning, Father Tapa Holchek from the National Catholic Bioethics Center. Father, haven't spoken to you in a long time. I hope you're doing well. God bless you and good morning.
Good morning. Yes, doing great. Thank you, Teresa. I hope you are as well.
Yes, thanks be to God. This story is so heartbreaking, and it's just another example of I think it truly does reflect the beauty and the wisdom in church teaching. And we're talking about the story that's been breaking the last couple of days. It's an IVF mom, an in vitro fertilization mom, giving birth to someone else's babies. The couple is now suing the clinic, alleging a massive mix-up. Just let me share the story with our listeners in case they're not familiar. And this is just one story that we pulled from USA Today, for example. The first sign something was wrong at the California in vitro fertilization clinic was that the couple had thawed and implanted two female embryos, only to learn they were actual carrying boys. How could that be? A doctor at the fertility center in Los Angeles told the couple sometimes sonograms get it wrong. He assured the couple they were having girls and that nothing was wrong, according to a federal lawsuit filed by the couple and obtained by USA Today. Something was very wrong, according to the couple's legal claim. The mom delivering two boys, DNA testing showed the boys were not a genetic match to the couple who were Asian. Neither of the boys were. Further, the lawsuit alleged that the two male babies were not even genetically related to each other. The couple basically then, Father, we know, serving as surrogates for another couple who also had embryos at the clinic. This is such a nightmare, such a mess. What can we draw from this, do you think, Father, when we see stories like this in terms of the wisdom of church teaching on this issue?
Well, I think it's a clear reminder to us of how the Lord has set up the exclusivity of our human sexuality as something not to be taken and commercialized, as we have done wholesale in the U.S. now. I mean, the reality is that when you choose to get married to somebody, you are consecrating your body to them in a special way that is, you know, not just that you're some kind of sex cell donor to them. You're giving them your whole self, and you're hoping in that communion of love that new life may arise by the gift of God. But we've sort of taken it upon ourselves in kind of a pragmatic, can-do American mentality that we're going to steer this in our own direction. Mm-hmm. And then we turn ourselves into these gamete donors, and we pay large sums. This story that you're referencing, they spoke about how they spent over
$100,000. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it doesn't come cheap. And this is a remarkable mix-up on top of all of this, but reminds us how, if we respect the designs of God that were intended to be one flesh as husband and wife, and only in that one flesh union is the gift of life to be transmitted, and not allow third parties here to step in and handle our gametes and handle our kids and freeze our kids and discard our kids. You know, there are literally millions of lives that have been lost through in vitro fertilization. These embryos are produced, they're discarded, they're treated as so much fodder, and, you know, they lose track of them. There's so many of them now that are in cryopreservation, that are stored in the deep freeze, that it's not a surprise when these kinds of things happen. And, you know, there are other angles. I'm sure you've heard of some of these other stories that have also been in the news recently, where there will be proprietors of these clinics who will offer insemination services, and they'll say something like, we've got a great donor, he's a university professor with a high IQ, and he's as handsome as Clark Gable, and, you know, you really want to use his sperm. And it turns out he just uses his own sperm. And this later gets discovered that he's actually fathered dozens or even hundreds of children, and nobody knew it. And now these children are growing up and realizing that they're meeting siblings,
right,
as all of this is happening.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a very, very awkward situation that we have created because the customer is always right. That has become the highest good here. And we don't pay attention to the designs that our good Lord has written into our own human sexuality and the beauty of human marriage.
I'm sure you've gotten this pushback, as I have in defending the life teachings of the church, where people say, well, and they don't do it in a mean way. Maybe they're harsh because it's very sensitive, but I think at their heart of hearts, they just maybe don't understand it. Maybe they haven't cracked open the documents or taken a close look at the catechism. But they say, how could this be bad if we want to produce life, regardless of how we go about it? We want children. Why would the church be against that? We often hear that line in accusing the church of being hypocritical, because they think that this is against life, when actually it's for life.
Well, I think the issue here is that it's not as clean cut as they're painting it. They're saying, hey, this is a pro-life technology, isn't it? And I have to say to them and push back gently and say, actually not. I mean, this is a two-edged sword, and you see the death-dealing edge of the sword in the destruction of young humans as embryos, or in what they call selective reductions, where mm-hmm. if a woman becomes pregnant with, let's say, triplets or quads, what do they recommend? They say, hey, we're going to do an abortion on two of your four children or three of your four children so that the one who is left over in your womb has a better chance of growing bigger and stronger. So, you know, this is not a pro-life approach at the end of the day. This is the manipulation of human life, the exploitation of weak individuals who have no say in this and are being taken advantage of because the parents, you know, are convinced that they're in the right. The church, you know, reminds us here that these are, of course, very delicate, very sensitive areas. And when couples encounter infertility, you know, they're being invited by the Lord to ask some deeper questions,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, how does the Lord intend us to be fruitful together?
Right. Right.
As man and woman, and he has some beautiful designs there that, you know, it may include other things like adoption, like maybe one of the parents will become a school teacher and have, you know, a whole classroom of children that they are a parental figure to. There are other designs that we have to explore, but a lot of times it's like, well, no, it needs to be the way
my design. That's exactly what I was talking about, and I was using the first reading for today, Father, where Jacob is wrestling with God. And I say, you know, we wrestle with God a lot, and asking questions and digging deeper and saying why God will understand, there's nothing wrong with that. That's a cry from the heart, and God's going to reveal truth to you if you're open to it. But when we get our backs up, as you just said, and say, nope, I'm going to do it my way, and I'm going to go through with this because I want a baby, and I think this is what I need to make me happy. That's where the trouble comes in when we try to take things over. We're getting some calls. Let's take one call before the break, and then we'll take more calls afterward. The number is 877-573-7825. Chatting with the brilliant Father Tad Poholcek, and he's with the National Catholic Bioethics Center, reflecting on this story in the news, another heartbreaking story regarding IVF gone wrong. Is it Jeannie from Real Presence Radio on line one? Good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, it is, Jeannie. You got that right. Thanks, Teresa. So I am calling in because I work for a small nonprofit adoption agency. And I haven't run into this yet because I recently started working with them, but they do provide home studies, which are required in order to adopt any child for anybody that is looking to adopt an embryo. So I'm sure you might be familiar with this, but some people do traditional adoption where, you know, someone else is creating an adoption plan for their child and places their child in another home. But then there's embryo adoption where you really go to this bank and choose an embryo and then have that implanted into the mother's uterus. And so my question is, as a practicing Catholic, how should I approach that situation? They're coming to us. We don't provide, you know, the embryos or anything, but they're coming to us for that pre-home study and then post-placement services.
Okay.
If that
all
makes
right.
sense.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. And thanks for sharing what you're dealing with right now. Father, any suggestions for Jeannie?
That's an interesting question. I think that the question becomes, first, I mean, we have to ask, is embryo adoption itself a problem? And technically, morally speaking, it remains open. The church hasn't closed the door completely on this, but the church has issued a document called Dignitas Personae, where there is very strongly cautionary language against this practice.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the first part. The second part, then, if it's not a problem per se, doing the home preparation or analysis ahead of time shouldn't raise fundamental problems.
Okay, more questions for Father Tad. Give us a call, 877-573-7825. Why the church teaches what she teaches about issues, hot-button issues such as in vitro fertilization. More on that coming up with Father Tad from the National Catholic Bioethics Center.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
Not everyone who's attracted to the Lord and to a life of service is necessarily meant to be a priest. So there's all kinds of forms. I mean, from, let's say, the brotherhood, if you want to stay within a formal religious context, but then all kinds of ministries within a parish, all kinds of lay ministries that you can do. So not everyone's called to the priesthood. A priest is someone who is dedicated, devoted to ongoing study and ongoing prayer, to be a spiritual father. As Pope Benedict said, one of his wisest remarks, he said, people want many things from a priest, but what they want above all is someone who's a master of the spiritual life. Hey, I'm great at this ministry, and hey, I'm great at organizing this meeting, and hey, I'm great. Fine, but ultimately what the people want is you're a master of the spiritual life. You got to be, therefore, trained in prayer and theology and spirituality and so on.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic?
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to a priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to
The Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary and are committed.
As far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders. Today, 2 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. Dr. A here. Well, being a grandparent's just like being a parent, isn't it? Only different here. I have a book with that same title. And in that book, I take on the ups and the downs of being grandparents. It's a second go around with the kids in a way that mirrors God's own unconditional love for us. You can get the book and my many others at AveMariaRadio.net.
Keeping you connected from a Catholic perspective, through a Catholic perspective. As Al says, looking at everything through the lenses of Scripture and the teachings of the Catholic Church, including these stories that make headlines and remind us of the beauty and the reason the Church gives us these teachings. And we sometimes see things that don't make sense. We need to ask. We need to dig. We need to pray. And at the end of the day, say, okay, you are God, and I am not. 877-573-7825. We're having a discussion with Father Tad Paholczyk with the National Catholic Bioethics Center. And Father, this whole issue of in vitro fertilization, you and I were talking during the break, unfortunately does not get discussed all that often, if at all, at the parish level, especially during marriage prep, which is problematic big time.
Yeah, definitely. This is an area that people tend to shy away from. And I encourage priests, I do a lot of clergy convocations, mm-hmm. and I strongly encourage them to bring this up and address it. You know, it is sensitive material, but there are good ways to do this in the parish. And I think a lot of priests are realizing that, you know, hey, if I don't say something here, where are people going to get their information? They're going to get their information from, you know, People Magazine, Cosmopolitan Magazine, you know, places like that. And we don't want them getting their moral teaching from those kinds of sources.
Mm-hmm. And the Catechism of the Catholic Church, too, on in vitro fertilization, talks about when you get into this situation, you're turning over, and you alluded to this beautifully during before the break, that we're turning it over to technology, we're turning it over to human error, to human beings, rather than trusting God with that life.
Yes, I think that this understanding of the mystery of our sexuality, how we are always in a receptive posture, that God is the giver of the gift, and there is a sense that we have to trust that he knows the big picture even better than we do.
Mm-hmm.
And this does mean there will be some couples who he does not intend to have children of their own flesh and blood. So, you know, that's a hard thing for some of us to swallow, understandably, you know, because it's such a deeply ingrained desire that is in us to have children. To work with that and to say, you know, spiritually, there are things that have to happen in my life as I grapple and struggle with this potential reality. Now, it's not always the case that if a couple runs into infertility,
right,
that automatically means that they can't have kids. There's some great technologies out there that are morally very praiseworthy. For example, something called NAPRO technology.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that really looks at the underlying cause. So, you know, let's say the woman has a blocked fallopian tube. They can go in and do a surgery. Now it's open again, and her eggs can pass through and sperm can enter, and she may be able now to get pregnant the normal way. Similarly, the man may have low sperm count because maybe he's taking some kind of blood pressure medicine, and he could temporarily go off of that, and his sperm count rises, and together they, you know, conceive a child the normal. Those kinds of steps are going to be praiseworthy, are not going to raise moral problems, and a couple can sometimes do a lot of good groundwork ahead of time here and discover if there is some impediment like that that can be addressed.
We're chatting with Father Ted Poholcek about a recent story in the news, and it was pretty traumatic. And it was an Asian couple from the Queens area of New York suing now a major IVF facility in Los Angeles because of a horrific mix-up. And the discussions, too, within the articles, Father, if you read them, it's very void of understanding the true dignity of the human person, because they're saying, well, we wanted girls and there were boys. And it was as if this, you know, they're making up their own minds about what kind of a baby they wanted. There's all these things that you can draw into it if you're looking at it through the lenses of Catholic teaching.
Right. I think that people tend to approach this as another business venture and another means of using some of the powers of science to be harnessed and get what they want. I mean, it's a funny transition that has happened in this area, I think, since assisted reproductive technologies have come onto the scene. And we've got to step away from that and see this bigger picture and realize that there are much deeper designs written into who we are and into the gift of ourself to another person that can't be commercialized, can't be trivialized in the way that the assisted reproductive technology industry is doing. And it's not just another sort of choice among choices that we make, whether we're buying a red car or buying a blue car. You know, we're going to have a male or a female, and we're going to, you know, choose this, that, and the other thing, or we're going to screen the kid ahead of time using pre-implantation genetic diagnosis to make sure there's no genetic defects of this, that, or the other type, you know, and the list just gets longer and longer, and it becomes total quality control and satisfaction of customer desire. So, you know, we've got to step away from that and say, look, if the Lord sends us a life, whatever that life is, however mm-hmm. it looks, it's a blessing and a gift. And I think that's a hard thing for a lot of people to say yes to. You know, that even the possibility that my child will be anything less than perfect and certain to make it into Harvard, you know, then that's no good. I don't want that. I'm going to say no to the Lord on that. I will set the terms here because these proprietors of these businesses are telling me that I can do it. So, you know, I think there's much greater responsibility on the part of those who run these businesses than the customers. A lot of times, you know, women go through this in particular, and afterwards they describe, you know, oh, this turned my whole body upside down. It was just such an unpleasant procedure, and all the injections I had to do. And the man, too, sometimes will, you know, admit that he's just being viewed as a donor and, you know, using pornography and so on to provide the sample. And The list goes on, and the awkwardness of it, you know, when we chronicle it, people realize this is not respecting human dignity at its core. This is turning it into an entirely different kind of enterprise.
All right, let's go to a quick question as we wrap up. Phil calling from Fort Wayne, Indiana, on line two. Phil, what's your question for Father Ted? Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Yeah, my question was along the pro-life issue. Like, I remember Dr. Ted or Father Ted saying just a few years ago on Catholic Answers that the in vitro fertilization births was up to 50,000 births, currently per year. And I'm thinking the number of embryos that have gone away.
Okay, you know what, Phil, we're losing your phone. Let me just ask the question for you because you keep going in and out, and we only have about a minute left. I don't mean to interrupt, but I just want to say what you're saying and that Andrew told me your question refers to. And you're wondering why there is no movement about the issue of abortions that are taking place at IVF clinics. Do you need actual abortions on the women, or are you talking about the embryos that are, which is also a form of abortion, the embryos that are destroyed? And Father, can you address that?
Yeah, I think this is a real concern. And I think a lot of pro-life people are recognizing that the carnage that happens along the way here as embryos are destroyed, as they're poured down the sink, as they're frozen. You know, when you freeze an embryo, everybody thinks, oh, well, that's not so bad because later you just thaw the embryo out. But you know what? You lose close to half of those embryos through the freeze-thaw cycles. So there's a lot of human death and destruction that's happening here. And people are beginning to wake up to this, I think, in the pro-life movement. And they're asking, shouldn't we be, you know, registering our concerns with these clinics? And the answer is definitely yes.
Yes.
Definitely yes.
Father, so much more we can talk about. We'll have to have you back on. But again, the National Catholic Bioethics Center is a great resource. And it's ncbcenter.org, National Catholic Bioethics Center. And we would definitely take more of your questions on another day with Father Ted. Thanks, Father Ted. Keep up the great work.
Thanks so much, Teresa. I love being with you.
Same here. God bless you, and we'll be right back.
Is it impossible to live Jesus Christ's command that the marriage bond be indissoluble? No, says the Catholic Catechism. The Lord has not placed too heavy a burden on the shoulders of a married couple. By coming to restore the order of creation disturbed by sin, Christ himself gives the strength and grace to live marriage in the new dimension of the reign of God. By following Christ, renouncing themselves, and taking up their crosses, spouses will be able to receive the original meaning of marriage and live it with the help of Christ. St. Paul, in a letter to the Ephesians, emphasizes this when he admonishes men to love their wives as Christ loved the church. For this reason, Paul says, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams, and this is Evidences for Christianity. Some critics of the New Testament suggest it is filled with the prejudicial opinions of the writers, and not exactly what Christ taught, and therefore not reliable. They claim the stories and teachings were altered to bolster the church's authority. But the most prolific writer of the New Testament distinguished Christ's teachings from his own. Paul's discussion of marriage and celibacy in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 is a perfectly good place for him to pass off his own opinions as those of Christ. But he does just the opposite. Twice, in verses 10 and 12, he writes plainly, "This say I, not the Lord." And that's evidence for the authenticity of Christianity. To explore more, go to AveMariaRadio.net. Under resources, look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
Welcome back. Hope your Tuesday is a good one so far. You're listening to the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Joan Lewis joins us live. Joan's Rome. All right, so let's start out on a fun, light, positive note. You had a cute story, which I've posted And I think it's adorable. And you sent it to Kelly Walquist, and you join us each year for our wine and shrine trip, which comes up in November. And this year we're close to not quite sold out, but getting there. We already have, I think, 25 plus women signed up for this year's wine and shrine, which always includes, in moderation, some Prosecco. And there is a special distinction regarding this bubbly. Do explain. Good morning.
Well, should I say I'm not surprised that the something that is such an excellent product should be recognized by the UNESCO World Heritage Site.
There so you go.
Entire Italian Prosecco region, northeastern Italy, where so many good whites come from anyway, the Veneto, etc. area, recognized that, I think it was just yesterday. And what great news, because I find Prosecco a lovely way if I'm out having dinner with friends, a glass of chilled bubbly Prosecco, what a great way to start dinner. And it actually makes me think of a sign I have in my home that I bought at the Navy base in Hawaii in about 2-inch high letters. It says alcohol. It says, no good conversation ever started with a salad. Think about it. Yeah,
I hope Kelly's listening to this. Oh,
yeah,
that's funny.
It's probably certainly true of, you know, of Prosecco, but we all love it. And it's light. And
it's very light, and it's so perfect for summer. And, of course, for the famous, which I love, you know, the Aperol Spritz.
Yeah. Oh, yes, exactly. So, but a wonderful distinction, and I know that the article mentioned that I had heard a couple of years ago that it was outselling champagne in the United States. And, of course, now apparently it is also outselling China, Spain, and France. You know, so, yeah, Italy extended its lead in the UNESCO rankings over China, Spain, and France. So, interesting enough. And, you know, Therese, I don't know about you, but when I read this article that I sent you all, I did not know that there was a non-sparkling version of Prosecco called Prosecco Spento.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah. I think that's absolutely fascinating. So you can get non-bubbly, but I think I like the bubbles.
Absolutely. It's like, anyway, especially when you go, like, it reminds me of when you sit down and they ask you what kind of water you want. I love the sparkling water, but, you know, some people don't. But it's, you know, still or gas, right?
And also there is, I read an article a couple of days earlier before the UNESCO ranking article, that there's a sparkling wine, lesser known than Prosecco, and it's called Franciacorta, D-O-C-G. So it's not only D-O-C, doc, which is the you want to have that on the bottle.
Right.
It is G, and that means guaranteed.
Yeah.
So,
And there's an interesting, we don't have time for it this morning, but there's a lot of interesting connections to the wines, not only in Italy, but around the world and the Catholic Church. And we'll have to talk about that someday.
Sure.
But yeah, and that's a fun article you've got on the Prosecco and the World Heritage News. But I want to get to a serious topic that has a lot of people wondering what in the world is going on. And this is a story regarding the relics of St. Peter. So explain, please.
I know. Well, on Saturday, June 9th, which is the Feast of Saints Peter and Paul Apostles, and the day in which palliums are blessed and given to new archbishops, there's always a delegation from the Ecumenical Patriarchate of Constantinople. People might know the name Bartholomew, Patriarch Bartholomew. So if he doesn't come, he always sends a representative. So this representative was in Rome for that event. And afterwards, his name, Archbishop Job, and afterwards, the Holy Father invited him to go down into the, below the main altar, the main papal altar of St. Peter's Basilica, where you can look through a glass window that really gives on to the burial place of St. Peter, to his bones, etc. And so they're praying there, and then the Pope says, oh, by the way, now come with me to the papal chapel. And that's the papal chapel in the Apostolic Palace, not where he says Mass in the morning. So this patriarch and several other, this archbishop and several other people go upstairs with the Pope. They go into a chapel where he never has said Mass. And he goes again, gets this magnificent reliquary that has been there since the days of Pope Paul VI that contains mm-hmm. nine bones, bones of Saint, of the body of St. Peter when his grave was discovered 60-some years ago below the basilica. Anyway, so the Pope takes this reliquary out and he hands it to Job and this to this archbishop. And so, like, here, bring this back to Constantinople, which is not Constantinople, but Istanbul. Bring this and, you know, give it to the patriarch, the ecumenical patriarch Bartholomew. And I know they are very close, and that's wonderful. But the archbishop himself wrote an account of that. I was stunned when I read that
Me
he'd
too.
Given these nine precious bone fragments. I had heard years ago, and I since happily found out that I was wrong.
Right, as you said in your blog today, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I had heard years ago that these were the only relics we had of St. Peter. So for the Pope to give them away, I was devastated. Well, they are not the only relics. There are more bone fragments down in the Scavi, just, you know, right next to his burial place. Anyway, what is so fascinating is Archbishop Job gives an account of the afternoon with the Pope.
The conversation,
said,
yeah.
He says, quote, "When we entered the chapel, Pope Francis explained to me that Paul VI wanted to keep part of the relics of St. Peter from the basilica in his private chapel. Further, Pope Francis told him, Job, during the prayer in the previous evening, he had this thought. I no longer live in the Apostolic Palace. I never use this chapel. I never serve Holy Mass here. And we have St. Peter's relics in the basilica itself, so it will be better if they will be kept in Constantinople. He tells Archbishop Job, this is my gift to the church. It's not really from me. It's a gift from God. And if Archbishop Job was surprised, so were the rest of us who read this story. Because now, Teresa, these relics were in the Pope's private chapel, which I've been in a number of times, in the Apostolic Palace. And Paul VI enjoyed them. I'm sure, even though it was brief, John Paul I. John Paul II, we know for sure, Benedict. And now no future pope can ever enjoy those relics of St. Peter, the first pope. And popes are the successor of St.
Peter.
Peter's, the successors. Mm-hmm. So just that part of it, I guess, what he thought and told Archbishop, what Pope Francis thought, and told Archbishop Job about the chapel, you know, I had this thought, well, I never come here, et cetera, what use is it? And I my heart was broken. And, I mean, I'm sure the Orthodox are thrilled, but that's only one Orthodox church. I don't know if our listeners realize that there are many independent patriarchates. There's no one leader for the Orthodox Church as there is for the Catholic Church in the person of the Holy mm-hmm. Father, the Pope.
Mm-hmm.
So Catholics are upset. Is some Catholic church going to ask about this? Could we have a relic? You know, why wasn't, if you have this thought, take four or five fragments that are next to St. Peter's tomb, create a beautiful reliquary, have it padded, whatever you want to do with it inside,
right.
Then present it to Patriarch Bartholomew via a messenger of his and say, by the way, I've been thinking of all of you, my Orthodox brothers and sisters, and I had this especially made for you. So it's a huge, huge disappointment to know that that gorgeous reliquary is no longer in Rome in the hands of the, you know, the Holy Father of the Catholic Church. And I guess I was mystified by this, but according to canon law, I think it's 1190, he can, the Pope has the right to do this. So
okay, that's he may have the right to do it, but I think, again, the Vatican misses an opportunity to educate about a reliquary, a relics, and in this conversation, and to give some reason as to why the Pope thinks this is a good thing. I mean, is he giving it, and we can only guess, is he giving it because he's hoping for reunification between the Orthodox and the Catholics, and maybe having the presence of, because of the, you know, emphasis we put on venerating relics, that maybe this will help somehow bring unification? I don't know, but it would be nice to have some explanation.
You're right. You're right. There was absolutely no reason given, and even apparently in their private conversation, the Pope and Archbishop Job talking, there was no reason given, you know, this is just my gift. But interestingly enough, two things. The division with the Orthodox, we, of course, believe, know that Jesus gave the keys of the kingdom to Peter as the the rock upon which I will
build my church. Matthew 16:18, right.
And the Orthodox believe that the keys of the kingdom were given to Andrew, Peter's brother. So, and then the Orthodox today do not, they have a problem, let's put it this way diplomatically, they have a problem with the primacy of Peter. So for me, Joan, having studied these issues, the Orthodox, because I interviewed an archbishop years ago in Istanbul during Pope Benedict's trip, and I studied for the interview as if my entire journalistic career depended on the outcome, and because I didn't know that much about the Orthodox. And so I studied a lot, learned a lot, and the part about, you know, they're having a problem in unity. I think there's certain things we agree on in theology, other things we don't agree on with the Orthodox. So it's, if it had been a suffering Catholic Church, oh, my word, give relics to the suffering Catholics in China?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Teresa, it's just so hard to, like you said, there's no reason given.
Right, and with all due respect to the Holy Father, I don't know if they understand or are concerned the impact and the fallout of these discussions, because very few are going to have the depth of the discussions that we have or access to it, because we continue to try to build our audience, right? But we still know that we're a niche community, we are growing, thanks be to God. But the perspective that we talk about this in the Catholic circles, so people can understand the significance, and also I think the Apostolic Palace, okay, he's made his case as to why he prefers to live at the Santa Marta residence, but that doesn't mean that a future pope does not want to go back to the Apostolic Palace, which, by the way, is extremely simple and not some palatial palace as the media wrongly presented when Pope Francis was first elected. So there's impact of these conversations that, because of the climate that we're in with social media, with the internet, how they go viral in a nanosecond. And it leaves just like, okay. And the first thing I thought of was the Scavi. That's the first thing. I'm so glad you wrote about it in your column and explained it, because I've been to the Scavi 3 or 4 times. That's an amazing experience. And to me, this kind of diminishes. Well, it's these relics aren't that big of a deal. I'm not saying that that's what the Holy, I don't know what the Holy Father's thinking, but that kind of an impression, people can be left with that.
Teresa, I think there's one thing here that maybe priests, bishops, cardinals, Holy Father don't care about, but they should know about. Perception is everything.
Everything.
Perception is reality for people today.
Right.
How, I mean, just perception. It can be what a person does, how it is perceived, even if what they're doing was not their, you know, that's not their original intention, but the public or critics or whomever see it that way. They perceive it that way. So, it's wonderful for the Orthodox. I am a little sad for future popes who will not have that gorgeous reliquary. And by the way, I'm one of a privileged few people on earth who was near it on November 24th, 2013, the final Mass for the Year of Faith. And I was one of the persons selected to receive the Evangelium from the hands of the Pope. And for that Mass, the relics were brought out to St. Peter's Square and placed on a podium. So I posted, the picture that I posted on my website is the picture that I took that day of the reliquary. So at least I've been that close. But you know what, Teresa? None of us now have a chance to see it. How wouldn't it have been spectacular? Create a reliquary for the reliquary, a see-through plexiglass, whatever you want to do. Obviously,
or maybe put it in St. Peter's near the statue of St. Peter, where we always rub the foot of St. Peter. That's the first thing also that popped into my head that would have been wonderful. But they're not consulting us. We just pray and respectfully discuss these things, which we are allowed to do respectfully. Joan, great work as always, and we'll see you on Jim and Joy, At Home with Jim and Joy. We'll be right back on a Tuesday to wrap up and let you know what's coming up on a Wednesday. Stay tuned.
He was a doctor of the church and one of the most famous saints of all time.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Augustine is honored for his immense contributions to theology, but he balanced his genius with humility. Once declared, it was pride that changed angels into devils. It is humility that makes men as angels. He died in 461.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Beth, why is our health insurance so expensive? Our premium and deductible are so high. Plus, I don't want my family to support a company that doesn't share our values.
Kim, there is another option. Check out CMF Curo. It's an affordable Catholic healthcare ministry where members share their medical costs in community, and it's pro-life. We joined last year and have saved thousands, all without compromising our values. Just go to MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
CMF Curo sounds exactly like what our family needs.
Yeah, that's MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 10 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan cost goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Thanks for tuning in to Catholic Connection. Don't forget, all of our work is archived every day. Just go to AveMariaRadio.net, the archive section. Andrew usually has things posted by midday. Coming up tomorrow, a full hour with Father Robert Spitzer. Because this is a month of independence and freedom, we're going to talk about real freedom versus what the world's version of freedom is. Hope you can join us. We'll see you then. Ciao, ciao.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Krucek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.